and welcome everyone to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange session. Today's topic is Dynacache Trace Analysis Servlet and JSP Caching. Today's presenter is Varun Talapragadatta. Varun has been in WebSphere Application Server Support since 2006. He is responsible for solving customer problems related to WebSphere Application Server with specialization in various components including dynamic caching, session management, web container, JSP, JSS, class loader, SIP, and security. At this time, I'd like to turn the presentation over to Varun.
Thank you, Kathy. Good morning, everyone. Even though we have a question and answer session at the end of this presentation, if you have any questions in later point of time, feel free to send an email to me. My email address is listed in this first slide, varunt@us.ibm.com. Today's topic is about the deep trace analysis for the dynamic caching when you have the servlet and JSP caching enabled. Moving on to slide number 2. Okay, let's start here with a very high-level overview of what Dynacache is, and then we talk about one sample application that I developed and used for this presentation, throughout this presentation, for the trace analysis. And then we discuss about the policy file overview and what the importance is. And then I will briefly talk about the configurations in the WebSphere application server admin console. And then we discuss about the detailed trace analysis for various options, like when there is no replication configured at all, with the trace analysis for that. And then we talk about replication policy to both push and pull, and push trace analysis, and if you selected not shared, whatever the trace analysis for that, we will look into it. Moving on to slide number 3. Performance is a major criteria for any of these J2E applications. So Dynacache is an IBM-provided solution to improve this performance for these J2E applications. Basically, cache instances are used to store and retrieve and replicate the objects to other servers in the cluster. So basically, the storing and retrieving concept is basically depending on what cache instance you created. And you can create a separate cache instance for your application, for each of the application in your environment. If you are not using any specific cache instances, like the default cache instance is used, which is for the servlet caching, the default cache instance is services cache and base cache. Like that way, you will be having a different cache, default cache for the object cache instances. We are not going through that object cache instances in this presentation. This presentation is for the JSPs and servlet caching. So it will be created only when the servlet caching is enabled. So this default cache, whatever it has, right, whenever you enable the servlet caching from the admin console, that will be enabled. And you can create your custom cache from these options, like admin console is one option where you can create this custom cache instance, and also from a property file. Moving on to slide number 4, a cache.xml file is a deployable XML file where it can be in the web IAMS directory of the web modules normally, and the servlet and JSP caching that you are going to cache, you need to provide that information with some policy rules defined in this cache-spec.xml file. We'll go over this cache-spec.xml file with a very sample one later slides. And whatever the rules that you define in the cache-spec.xml file, it will decide on what instance is used and what should be cached and where should be cached, where and when to be cached, those kind of things, various settings that you can give, and that is a deployable XML file in the application. So application developers should configure this and code this cache-spec.xml file manually and place it in the WebINF directory of the web module to have this servlet and JSP caching, other than enabling the servlet and JSP caching from the admin console. The default cache instance will be used if the custom cache instance is not defined, as I mentioned earlier. So by default, it uses the default one is picked when there is no custom cache instances defined. Whenever there is a request coming into the web container, the DynaCache will intercept that service method of that request, and it will check this cache-spec.xml file to see if this specific request is to be cached or if the response needs to be driven from the DynaCache, from the cache, or this is a fresh request. That will decide, and each and every request will be intercepted by the DynaCache when a request arrives into the web container. And it's servlet and JSP caching, right? Whatever you define in the cache-spec.xml file is based on the request parameters, for example, and some attributes, and the URI that you define, or it can be based on session information or other options, including cookies. Go on to slide number 5. This is a brief overview of what caching is available in the application server. It says, you can use servlet caching, command caching, web services caching, or object caching, based on the cache instances and cache policy.xml file that you define. And also, it can you have an ability to disk offload these contents once the given space or defined amount of the cache entries and the size are reached. You can disk offload them, and also you can replicate to other application servers with data replication service, which is internal to the IBM WebSphere application server DynaCache component. And also you can very well use the external caches. In this case, it can be an extreme scale or whatever, right? And you can use the cache statistics, monitor these cache statistics with the cache monitor application that comes with the product of the WebSphere application server, and you can make use of that cache monitor application to view the cache statistics. So I'm not going over, very detailed of what a serverless caching is or what more details on that, because this presentation is especially for the trace analysis. You can very well go into the WSCE presentation that I provided earlier. The link has been provided here. So move on to slide number 6. To talk about the sample application now, it's a very simple sample application that I have. We can discuss that now. Move on to slide number 7. So in the sample application, it's an ER file with one servlet, DynaCache servlet, and that takes some requests, and it includes one JSP file, varun.jsp file. And this JSP includes one static file, static content, one JPEG file, varunt.jpg. right? As I mentioned here, I just I took this from the RAD, and here is what you see. And the cashback.xml file should be in the WebINF directory, as it mentioned here. And the cashback.xml file will have all these rules and a set of rules on what to be cached and the timeout values and extra. Move on to slide number 8. Policy file. So move on to slide number 9. This is a policy file. I'm just comparing how the policy file, this XML file, cashback.xml file, will look like for a given request, what it will cache and what it can use when a request comes on a Dynacache server. See, as you see, this URL, right, whatever the hostname port and dynamic caching, Dynacache servlet, when it comes to that is the request that is coming to web container, this Dynacache will intercept the service method of this particular servlet, and based on these action and parameters, which are the default ones, I gave the timeout values here as 300 and inactivity timeout to be 180. That means after the 180 seconds of that specific entry, that will get invalidated by the Dynacache component. See, the very first top line, right, you can have your own cache instance specified here, right? Since I'm not specifying anything here, I can use my own, I can use the default cache instance of the Dynacache that uses. And the first cache entries, right, each element is represented as a cache entry here. Each cache entry will have, in the very first cache entry, is the Dynacache servlet, which has the information related to the Dynacache servlet there. And then second cache entry is for the varun.jsp file. And I am also caching the static content here, the JPEG file, varun.jpeg file. For that, you need to give the file serving, simple file servlet class that it comes from the IBM web container one. You need to include that to cache that JPEG file as well. Move on to slide number 10. So this policy file, if you take only one cache entry, right, and the top right side portion is for the driven from the cache spec.xml file, right, and the bottom one was driven from the cache monitor application, right, as I mentioned. You can see the cache content and cache statistics from the cache monitor application. If you see the cache monitor application, you can see the what request it is coming in against that request. For example, here Dynacache servlet is a request here. For that, the Dynacache generates a cache ID depending on what you specify in the cachespec.xml file. So that is called the cache ID, and this is very important for us to identify what cache ID for any trace analysis. So normally IBM support requests this cache ID to debug any of the Dynacache problems when they review the traces. Move on to slide number 11. Okay, let's see the configuration on what you need to do of when you want to enable some certain kind of replication types in the admin console. Move on to slide number 12. So here, this panel, if you see on the right side bottom, you see the cache replication, enable cache replication. That is one checkbox, right? You can enable the replication from this panel, right, where you have an option to see what replication types you can enable. See, if you see that not shared is being selected there, right, you can select both push-pull and push-only, and pull-only is deprecated, and we do not support pull anymore after this version, so we do not recommend any of the customers to use pull-only. So all we talk about in these traces is about when there is no replication at all, how the trace looks like and what are the points that we need to concentrate. And when both push and pull is selected as a replication type, we will see what traces we need to see and how the DynaCache behaves in that scenario. And when we have a push only, how that behaves, and with not shared, means it will not share any of the entries and the data to other application servers. Only it shares only the invalidation events to other application servers. So I will talk about each one of them when we go into the each one of these sections. But wanted to make sure to you that you need to create the replication domain before you enable the cache replication. You can create the replication domain with the name, whatever the name here. Here in this case, DynaCache domain is the one which I selected, and entire domain, right? And then I selected that. It will appear in that drop down to select which replication domain you wanted to select for this DynaCache replication. So if you can see at the top, right, in the right side top, you see the cache size and the default dynamic cache provider, right? That is the default one. And you can also limit the memory cache size to be like, if you want to limit only 1 gig of data in memory, and then you can limit that, and then so that the DynaCache will remove the cache content, which is at least recently used cache content from the, so that it maintains only the 2000 cache entry size. And you can also enable disk offload. What it does is after these 2000 entries, DynaCache will evict all these or least recently used ones to the disk of the drive, and so that you will not see any out of memory issues or any kind of performance issues with the DynaCache. We normally ask customers to use this. Moving on to slide number 13, let's talk about the trace analysis for various options that I just mentioned about when there is no replication enabled. First, we will see that, and then we'll talk about the other options. Move on to slide number 14. So when there is no replication enabled, what it means is I just have two cluster members here, member one and number two in a cluster, and I am using cache monitor application, and a request is being sent to one JVM or the member one, and then trying to see what trace points that we see in that member one, and what do we see in number two as well. So when there is no replication means whatever the data or whatever the cache entries or whatever the invalidation events, those are specific to this particular JVM and member one, and those are not replicated to any of the other JVMs in this cluster. In this case, since I am accessing member one, whatever the cache IDs and the cache data is specific to member one, and it will not get replicated to member two. So here, I access member one, and I see that I immediately access the cache monitor on that JVM, on that member one, and see what are the cache statistics there. And I see that the middle part, right, on the right, it shows the cache IDs for the servlet as well as JSP and the static content. These are the three cache IDs, because these are the three items that I defined in my cachespec.xml file. And they also, it tells you, this cache monitor application will tell you whether replication is checked or not. In this case, since there is no replication at all, right, so replication is not checked. That means this is false. Replication is false. So move on to slide number 15. So what I'm trying to see here is, as soon as we start the server and before the replication, before I access the member, right, I see that this cache, whatever I defined in my admin console, let's say the cache size, which has been defined in the admin console, and also it is telling me the first few lines, right? It is telling me that there is no replication enabled at all, and also it tells me that the cache provider is a default cache provider, and your and also the instance name is base cache, and it tells me that the specific cache is cache and base cache has been initialized successfully, and I also see the cachespec.xml file is been properly loaded. In the next slide, we will see a comment in the trace that it loads properly without any issues. But all I wanted to tell you here is the cachespec.xml file, it loads all this information. If you see on the left-hand side, it tells you that timeout values, the inactivity timeout. The difference between the inactivity timeout and the timeout for 300 seconds and 180 seconds is that if you access your application or the page, and that cached item will be there for 180 seconds, and if you are not touching that cache in that particular page for more than 180 seconds, then that particular entry will be invalidated, that particular cache ID will be invalidated. So that is the inactivity timeout, and the timeout 300 seconds, which is the absolute timeout value, no matter what, that specific cache entry will be removed after these 300 seconds. That's what it means. And it also tells you that on the left-hand side, it also tells you that it's a servlet. And this will display all these cache entries, whatever you define in this cachespec.xml file that is getting loaded from your EAR file, from this application, from WebINF directory, as I highlighted there. Moving on to slide number 16. So, as I mentioned, right, this is loaded. The cachespec.xml file, you would see this kind of entries in the trace file whenever you enable the DynaCache traces and the replication related traces, DRS traces. You would see these entries showing that, telling that this cachespec.xml file from this location got loaded correctly. That's what the above lines tells. And then the actual, as I mentioned earlier, the DynaCache will intercept the service method, right? There will be a servlet wrapper from the DynaCache servlet, from the DynaCache component, which intercepts the request that is coming into the web container first to see. This is a place where it says service entry point, where it starts the service for the servlet. And the handle request, absolute URI, if you see the URI, this is the exact same URI that that I use from my browser window, right, when I send a request to web container for that specific servlet. And you also see that this is not an included servlet, right? The dynamic caching is the servlet, which is not an included servlet, but this is a this is a request from the DynaCache. We can see that specific request in the DynaCache monitor as well in the letter. So once it receives and once it intercepts, it will load the metadata from the policy files for specific to servlet and JSP and for the static file as well. See, I just showed here, this is called the metadata that is getting loaded when a request arrives for this specific servlet. So it tells you that it is a servlet, and DynaCache servlet is the one which is being shown here with the timeout values and inactivity timeout values. Move on to slide number 17. So once it finds that, it executes the data, right, and then it finds that this specific servlet, right, entry, we see it as a set ID. It will set that ID specific to that specific servlet, right? You can see that from the in the middle, I gave a snapshot of what you see in the Dynacache monitor that exactly matches with whatever the set ID that you see in the traces, so that you can very well search for these traces with that cache ID to see where the set ID has been done for the very first time in these traces, right? And we see that the acronym called cache miss, what it does is cache miss and cache hit, right? What this cache miss means, this specific servlet or the specific resource is not being driven from the cache, but it's a fresh request altogether. That tells you that this is a fresh request, and you would see a cache miss for this specific ID related to the servlet, right? And then I put some debug statements in the servlet, right? Once it enters into the servlet code, you would see, as you can see from the system out statements, this is just before calling varun.jsp, and you would see these system out statements tells you that it is still not processed the varun.jsp at all so far, right? So far, it just processed the Dynacache servlet, and it's about to process the varun.jsp after this. So, if you see this below line, right, it tells you that this specific JSP, varun.jsp, it tells you that it is an included JSP from the trace point, you can find out from the traces that it's an included JSP. Move on to slide number 18. Okay, so again, since this JSP is included to the included in the servlet, right? You would see a statement in the traces that it's a parent fragment compose, which is you would see this kind of statements when you have a parent, when this JSP has a parent already exists. In this case, for this JSP, servlet is a parent, so you have a specific ID for this, and just make a note of these kind of things so that it will tell you whether it is a parent or just an included one. And also, it's after in the middle, I just made that this metadata for this specific JSP is being driven from the cachepeg.xml file, and it clearly tells you that it is preparing metadata for this JSP, and it shows whatever the metadata that you have in the cachepeg.xml file gets loaded. So for any specific reason, the cachepeg.xml file for any of these cache entries are not good, then what it does is you will see instead of cache entry at the middle, right, you would not see any cache entry, but you would see a blank there. That means you have a metadata for that, but you have a metadata or you have a cache entry for that specific URL, but Dynacache is not able to load that. So you will not see any metadata there, or you will see a blank. Instead of cache entry there, you would see a blank there for any specific JSPs. So if you see on the left side, right, it tells you that it is not shared, and you can see that the timeout value is again here. Move on to slide number 19. Since it is a first request for JSP, again, It goes with the same process of intercept that JSP the request, and then it will set the ID. Now this time, this ID is similar to what, again, it's the same as whatever you see in the cache monitor, and you will see that there is a cache miss because it's a fresh request. From that you can see, and then at the bottom, at the bottom you see, at the middle you see, it will print all the information that you have in the body of the JSP, and it processes that specific JSP at this point of time. And then at the bottom you see that it is, at this point it is putting this specific JSP information, right, the response, into the cache, and save the cache data. And you see at the bottom right corner, you see it is caching to true. That means this specific JSP will be cached first. The content of the JSP or the response for the JSP will be cached first because it is included one before it caches the servlet. Move on to slide number 20. Since the caching for the JSP is done, now it's time for the content to content for the servlet to be cached. So if you see, the as soon as it exists from the JSP service, I put some of debug statements that it tells you that it is off of JSP, Varun.jsp, and it is servicing, and it's finished for this particular servlet, and it stores or caches whatever the information related to the servlet, right, and then it exists from the service method of the servlet. And at the same time, we have some image also, right? This is a specific image which is been having the loading the metadata for this static file, and it tells you that you can see from the lower left hand corner where it says it's a static content, and the name of the class is this is a static file, and I have also provided what class it is trying to load here. Move on to slide number 21. So after the for the servlet, right, what I'm trying to do is access the application again in the timeout value, right? You should be able to get that information from the data cache instead of, you know, moving all the way to the backend or get the information again from the from the web container, right? So here, as soon as I it is still in the timeout values, right, 180 seconds. Remember, the timeout value that I gave was 180 seconds in the cache.xml file. So I'm accessing the servlet again well before the 180 seconds. So it starts here, the request is there, and then it sets the ID again and see whether it is from the, it can be driven from the Dyna cache, or it has to get it from the web container. Now in this case, it finds this ID in the Dyna cache, and you see a cache hit there. That means it is getting the information from the cache, right? But not from the web container. So that is for the servlet, and then it sees the cache hit there for the again for the JSP. It's the same process on handling the servlet and then setting the ID, and you see a cache hit as well for the JSP, and then you would see the same thing for the static content as well. Move on to slide number 22.
Sorry, is that common? There it is.
Okay. So now, once it gets the information for the JSP and the servlet, right, then it's time for it to response building, right? Once it knows that it needs to get from the it needs to get from the cache, right? You, as soon as you see a cache hit, then it's time for the then a cache to build the response for the entire build response for that specific request, right? The, you would see a statement here says that it's a cache response value true, and then initially it does the that for varun.jsp, and then again it wraps everything into the servlet. So you would see a for servlet as well as for the JPEG. So in the middle one, you see a static content for that, and then you would see a cache for that as well for that JPEG, right? And it tells you that it is from the cached response with a value true, and it builds one after other again, so that everything included will be given to the servlet, and servlet it will be completely built with that, including that servlet. Go back to going on to slide number 23. So if you, what happens after 180 seconds of the timeout value, right, the DynaCache will invalidate those entries after the 180 seconds as I mentioned. So these are the points where you can see cache remove and invalidation invalidated by ID, and the cache remove for the specific, you know, for that specific request, right? Servlet, DynaCache Servlet, and Varun.jsp, and the I highlighted them for the JPEGs as well. So it tells you that there is a source and cause. That source file means it's a local invalidation, right? So it got invalidated by its own JVM. That's what it means, and the cause is 6, which is inactivity. This got invalidated by the inactivity timeout. So there are some other causes where the application can invalidate that too. So you would see a different numbers there if the application is invalidating it. But if the it is getting invalidated because of the inactivity timeout, which is 180 seconds, then you will see a cause of 6, and it will clearly tell you the source, whether it gets invalidated by this JVM or the invalidation happens on the other JVM replicated to this JVM. So in this case, you have selected no replication, so there is no way that these replication events will be moved to other JVMs as well, right? You would not see any cache entries, cache data, or any invalidation events to other JVMs. So no replication, as I noted there, right? No replication, so no invalidation events on member 2, right? So after the invalidation, right, after this 180 seconds invalidation, I try to access the DynaCache servlet again, right, to see what I would see a test point there. So as I, since the entry got already invalidated, there is no data in the table of the DynaCache that it maintains for the cache ID and against to cache spec.xml file. So this will not find anything, and then it's treated as a fresh request again, and I see a cache miss for the servlet, and then I try to access member 2 right during the same time, and I see a cache miss there as well because there is no replication at all. So move on to slide number 24. Okay, so I just accessed, when I accessed the member 1 and member 2 after the invalidation, I would see a fresh request altogether, and I would see a different timestamp as well, right? If I am accessing in time before 180 seconds, I would have seen the same timestamp as I marked at the top. For each of the slide, each of the screenshot, you would see it. Now you see a different timestamps altogether. Right. Move on to slide number 25. So now, let's talk about what will happen if you select both push and pull as a replication type, right? So if you select both push and pull, what it means is, if a request goes to member 1 and that IDs, entries, cache IDs and the cache entries will be replicated immediately to member 2, and the data for that member 1, data will be still there in the member 1, but as and when it is needed for member 2, it will request that data from member 1. In other words, if I access member 1, right, first, and then it will have its own entries, cache entries, and the cache data, response data, right, it will be there. And if I access member 2 immediately, right, then these cache entries will already be there in member 2 by the time you access to member 2, right, and then member 2 will try to pull that information, the data, from the member 1. That's what this push and pull means. As and when it is needed, it will the JVMs will pull the data from other JVMs. So here in this case, as soon as I'm accessing, right, I already selected both push and pull, and initial request I'm sending it to member 1, and then it immediately maintains a push-pull table, right, on the number 2 whenever these entries are reached to member 2, so that it will check in that push-pull table to see if it needs to be pushed from the other JVM for the data, or it need not pull any information from the other JVM, right? So that's what it means. And I'm just showing these screenshots to let you know that these timestamps for the member 1 and member 2 and what will happen after you access the application again after invalidation, right? That's what I'm just trying to show there. And these timestamps are completely in sync with whatever the traces I'm just showing. So moving on to slide number 26. So replication policy, both push and pull, that is what we selected, right? And you see a trace point that tells you that default sharing type is 4, which is you have a sharing policy, sharing type to be 4, which is a push-pull, right? For each one of them, we have different numbers here. So this means number 4 means it's both push and pull. That's what it tells, and it also tells that it's the default provider is being used. Again, the same story. And then it loads whenever the request arrives on the first JVM, number 1, right? And you see the at the middle, you see that config is getting loaded, right? And it tells you, in the config metadata also, it will tell you that the sharing policy is 4, right? So now, in this case, at the bottom, DRS will check to see if ID need to be pulled from the other member, as I mentioned, right? This is a fresh request to member 1. Then for this, it doesn't need to. It will check in the push-pull table for this ID to see if it needs to pull the information from the other JVM. Obviously, since this is a fresh request, it clearly knows that it doesn't need to pull any information from the other JVM since it is a very first request. It's called the you should pull. That is a method called in the DynaCache component, DynaCache classes, to see if that needs to be pulled from the other JVM. Moving on to slide number 27. So, since this is the first request, you see a cache miss like any other for the earlier stress analysis, right? You see a cache miss for the first hit, and then you see a cache miss for the JSP as well, for the varun.jsp and varun.jpg, which you will see a cache miss for that too. Moving on to slide number 28. And now, as soon as it knows that it doesn't need to pull the information from the other JVM, so as soon as it knows it's a cache miss and it's a very fresh request, then it will update the other members, right? Member 2 here in this case, it will update the member 2 with this information on these cache IDs, cache entries, right, for varun.jpg and varun.jsp information, right, and then it will also tell you that at the bottom I showed you one more BRS transfer data. It's called announcing. Member one will announce these entries to the other JVMs that, okay, I have some information entries, right? In this case, it's three, which is the size of the entries. Three entries, I'm sending it to the other JVMs, right? It is announcing all the JVMs in that specific cluster, in that specific replication domain. Move on to slide number 29. Okay, now, before just it announces, now it's time for it to prepare the data. DRS will prepare this specific data to be sent to the other JVMs. In the upper portion, it says the processing messages, right? And then before it sends this information to the other JVMs, right, then it will serialize all these entries and sends that information, the entries, to the other JVM. Here in this case, it's the number one is the originating JVM, and number two is a partner member, right? It sends this information to other JVMs. And at this point of time, you need to make sure that you need to make a note of the hash codes and the as you see in the top left portion where I highlighted, right, that is very important to note that the message ID and the timestamp, right, that this message ID and timestamps are both are very important to see if this data is properly getting replicated to the other JVM or not. So in if you go into member 2, you would see a same message ID and the timestamp appear in that trace log as well, so that this is the starting point to identify which message is relevant to this specific push. Move on to slide number 30. So now you know that this number one announces these entries. Number one announces these entries to member two, peer or partner members. Right now, it's in a member two traces, right? If you see the message ID and the timestamp, that is a specific timestamp, the same timestamp and the message ID, and you know that this is coming from member two, from the bottom snippet, right? I just sent out a request to member two during that time to see what's how it looks like, right? Because the entries are already there, and I sent a request to member two during that time. So let's see what will happen. Move on to slide number 31. So now, in the member two traces, right, it prepares, right, pulling the data for that specific cache entry, right, when a request comes. So now, if you see that, you would see a should pull, right, in this member two traces, you see it is true now, because for this specific ID, right, this member two need to pull the information from the other partner member, right? So it will pull that information, it will process that information, right, and then it will renounce these entries, and it will tell you that it is from a remote object hit. From the bottom highlighted portion, right, I showed you that it is a remote cache hit. That means this specific object or this specific entry is not in this JVM, but it is in member one JVM, and it is pulling the information as shown above, and it is simply making a cache hit there that, yes, I have this information in my replication domain, and that will be served from the cache. from the member two. Move on to slide number 32. Okay, so it's, you will see the same kind of thing for the varun.jsp, right? Request for, it's the same kind of flow for JSP as well as for the JPEG file. You would see a cache hit for those as well, and you would see a remote cache hits to be true. Right, and object remote object one, remote object two. It will pull that remote objects one after other from the other class other cluster members. So it's the same identical cache hits. Move on to slide number 33. When an invalidation happens, right, now we access member one first and then access member two, and then after some time, right, I'm letting this get invalidated, right, after the 5 minutes of interval, right, I'm just accessing member one to see if it gets invalidated properly or not. I see that invalidation is happening, right, from member one traces. If you see, the inactivity, the invalidation is happening right in the very first bookmark, right? The highlight. I see that inactivity is 6, right, which is inactivity, and 5 the source is local. So in member one, it got invalidated, and if you see the number two traces, right, it is invalidating because of the inactivity timeout, which is 6. And it is happening from remote server. So that tells you that invalidation is happening from the remote from the other JVM, right? That source code and the cause 6 and source. So source domain is remote. Then after that, if I access member 1 again, then you see a cache miss. That's what it shows at the bottom. Move on to slide number 34. That's all about the push and pull. Now, what push means, that if you select a replication type to push, what it means is the content, the invalidation events, the entries and the data, everything will be pushed immediately to the other JVM. So, if I send a request to JVM 1, member 1, right, as I shown on the right-hand side, that member 1 content and the entries will be immediately pushed to the other JVMs. If you access the other JVM, now at this point of time, since this is a push only, then it will have its own data in its JVM, and it doesn't need to pull the information from the other JVMs. So I'm just initial request. I'm sending it to member one, right? Accessing member two, we should get a cache and paste, right? And then after accessing that, after invalidation, we'll see what will happen. Go on to slide number 35. So now, as I mentioned, right, again, it is loading the config from the metadata. Metadata is loaded from the cacheback.xml file, and you see a sharing policy to be 2, right? Default sharing type is 2, and then cache size, whatever the cache size that you define, those kinds will be shown. And at the middle, right, you see a request there, right? And it's a that request, and the metadata shows that it is a sharing policy too, and then you see a cache miss initially for the specific JVM, right? Now, let's see what will happen on JVM 1 or number 1, and what will happen on number 2 for these traces. Move on to slide number 36. So now, these events are pushed to other JVMs immediately, right? It will publish these events via the DRS, and DRS will send these entries to the other JVMs with the information, right, the cache data or whatever the data related to these specific resources, right? And and DRS, etching send is the acronym that you see here for a specific, that is a method where it sends this information, process this information to the other JVMs. And you also see that the cached content right here with the servlet request and the JSP files from the metadata, right? That will clearly tell you that what it is exactly sending, that information, when it sends this information to the other members. Move on to slide number 37. So once it sends this information on member 2, I'm switching to member 2 traces to show you that this is a timestamp, right? This is a base one where you need to search with this timestamp and the message ID, and then it extracts the information that it receives, and then it prints all this information on what it is receiving, right? What information it is receiving from member one. It also will tell you that it is from member one in this segment. Move on to slide number 38. Okay, so once this receives, right, that message is processed at member 2, so that there won't be any issues for that member 2 to serve that from the cache, right? This is what you see when the DRS tries to process this message, received messages in the member 2 traces. Move on to slide number 39. For this servlet and JSP static content, these are all right. These are all the things that it receives, and these content will be set correctly in member 2 for the users to use these specific resources from the cache, right? So you would see a set entry for these kind, right, for this DynaCache servlet, Varun.jsp and static content properly. And then, because once this is set, and when the request comes to member 2, then you would observe a cache hit. As you can see from the bottom portion of the trace snippet, you see that this request is coming, this is a DynaCache servlet, and this has been you should see a cache hit, because you already have the information in this member 2 traces, member 2 JVM. So you would see a cache hit for this particular DynaCache servlet. Move on to 40, page number 40. So that is what the push only for, right? And then now it's time for the last one, but not least, when you select a not shared mode, replication type mode, what will happen? So in this type, right, if you select as a replication type, then member 1 and member 2, it will share only the invalidation events, but no entries, no data. So only it will share the invalidation events. What I did is I'm just accessing member 1, right, observe a cache miss, and then after invalidation, you see a cache miss again, then access member 2 after invalidation, observe a cache miss there as well, and then see what you see from the traces perspective, and if the invalidation events are properly getting invalidated, right, properly sent to the other JVMs or not, and we also see if the specific entry gets invalidated in both JVMs or not. Move on to slide number 41. So member 1 traces, as since this is a very, very first request, you see a cache miss there, right? And then I see that the data or the entries are not getting replicated to member 2, right? But in the same lines, right, if you see that this specific, whenever it reaches the invalidation timeout, right, it sends those invalidation events first to the member 2, and then it will invalidate in the number 1, right? Whenever it reaches 180 seconds, first it will send the invalidation events to the member 2, and then it will invalidate completely from number 1 because number 2 knows how to invalidate from number 2, right? So go to the slide number 42. So once this cache gets invalidated, right, you see these specific entries, right, and it gets invalidated on number 1, and access number 1 after this invalidation events, you see a cache miss again. That's what it shows in the bottom snippet of the trace snippet. Go to the next phase, 43. So member 2 traces, right, once it receives, right, these invalidation events, it knows that it is receiving these events from member 1, and then it's the same scenario of searching the timestamp and the message ID. If you search with that, you would see further specific cache entries or further specific IDs, right, you would see that this particular number 1 is sending these invalidation events, right? And then you see this specific on what resources it needs to invalidate. You will see that specifically in number 2 traces. Move on to next slide. So incoming messages, once it receives those invalidation events, right, it processes those invalidation events and then it removes, right, from the member 2 traces, it removes these invalidation, it invalidates from its own cache as well, right? So if you see at the bottom, its source is 2. And it is removing the servlet, right, Danaka servlet, and then source is 2. That means that is remote invocations, right, remote invalidations happening on member 1. So invalidations are happening member 1, and this will remove these things from its JVM as well, from member 2 as well. Next slide, please. So accessing member 2 again after the invalidation, and then you would see a cache miss like we expect, right, because it's already been removed, invalidation events, and even if it is not getting invalidated, right, if you access the application on number 2, you would see a cache miss anyway, right? I think that's all I have. Go to the next slide, please. In a summary, what we have seen so far is trace analysis when we specifically enable, right, select no replication selected at all, and then once we select a replication, and if you select push and pull as a replication type, and then push only replication type, and when you select a not shared replication type, what will happen? So that's all I have, and move on to slide number 47, and over to Kathy.
Okay. Thank you, Varun. That was a great presentation. Time to move on to the question and answer session. Will the cache policy reload when you update the application with new policies, or you have to restart the WAS server?
Yeah. There are some defects around that area, but at this point of time, there are some custom properties as well, I believe, and you need to restart the JVM at this point of time to pick that specific cache-spec.xml policy file, whichever is changed from the application.
Can you tell what trace filter you need to set in order to see those logs? And this came in on slide 17.
So this trace all these traces were collected with the DynaCache MustGather, that is a DynaCache MustGather traces, right? So if my earlier presentation will have on what traces we need to collect for DynaCache problems, especially for the servlet and JSP caching with replications. So we can refer that to find out what is the exact trace string that we need to enable for this.
And then this next question came in, I believe, on slide 31. And it says, so member 1 announces just references, not the whole object in memory.
So it's basically member... Member 1 announces only the references for that specific entries. That is true. And Member 2 will pull that information from the Member 1 because it is the sharing policy is set it as a push and pull. That's what it says, should pull to true. That means it pulls all this information related to those objects or whatever the data related to those cache entries from the member one's cache.
And then the next question, I believe, came in, I may have gotten this a little bit late, but I believe it was slide 43. And this question is, is there any advisor in WAS that analyzes the logs or incoming requests and gives a hint what rules could be applied to the cache policy to improve the performance?
Can you repeat that question again, please, Kathy?
Is there any advisor in WAS that analyzes the logs or incoming requests and gives a hint what rules could be applied to the cache policy to improve the performance?
In these traces, unfortunately, it will not advise you or advise anything that based on these trace snippets or based on the requests that are getting into the application server. So we don't have any advisor for that on what cache policies and cache settings that they need to use in their application, unfortunately, because that is specific to the load and the application.
The next question in the chat room, it says, which is the best option among all replication types and why?
I know especially replication types, if you are sure that you don't want to replicate these data or entries, most of the commerce customers, they try to use not shared because they don't want to. It all depends on the application and the scenarios and the it all depends on definitely depends on the requirement. So if you wanted the DynaCache to be acting as a high availability thing, right, and you can definitely go for push and pull, right? Because if it is having many requests and the load is high, then we advise customers to go with push and pull. But most of the commerce customers, right, we ask them to, the tuning was to use the not shared because Commerce and Portal comes with some default cache instances, nearly 10 of them. So you don't want all of them to be replicated to the other JVMs unless and until it is really required for your application. It all depends on the application, though.
Next question from the chat room comes from James. He has two questions. I'll ask the first, and then I'll ask the second one second. Okay, it's about the list of cache IDs shown in the cache monitor. For the servlet / JSP cache scenario, would they be removed after stopping the ear app without stopping the server one?
Yes, that will. If you refresh these stats, it will have its own stats once you restart the application.
And the second question is, for the object cache scenario, would the cache ID be removed as well after stopping the ear app without stopping server one?
So object caching, you cannot see these object cache instances and object caching stats in this normal cache monitor application. You need to use the extended cache monitor to on top of this cache monitor application, right, to see these object cache stats. But yes, that would you need to refresh these stats for that as well. So same. Like servlet and JSP caching.
And the last question, I'm not certain, I'm just going to read it as it is what a difference this cache for cache other versions? That makes sense?
I did not get what he mean by other caches. Is David talking about the other cache providers other than the DynaCache, or... is he talking about DynaCache and then some auth cache and some other caches in the WebSphere application server itself? I'm not clear on the question, though.
Okay. David, if you could try and respond to the chat room for clarification. And we just have one more in there. Does replication work for all network topology on a cluster?
Yes. That works, yeah.
I don't see any additional things in the chat room.
Send out an email to me if they have any questions. Any questions, they are feel free to send an email to me, and then I'm more than happy to respond them.
At this time, we will conclude the presentation. We hope the information presented today has been valuable to you. We appreciate your participation, and we hope you will join us for future presentations, which will be announced on the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange site.